Good morning. The recording you're about to hear was made last Sunday at Monument Square in Concord, where the Climate Justice Rally was being held. The first voice you're going to hear on the recording is Bob Lawson, a local activist, a very active local activist. And he is going to be introducing the main speaker, Wynn Stevenson.
Before I bring on Wynn, I just thought I'd ramble here a little bit. I'm just thinking about us, climate activists around the world. And although the climb can seem so steep and so impossible, I feel like we're making cracks. I feel like the climate discussion is actually finally entering into the national conversation. I mean, when I think back to an election 4 years ago, climate change was never mentioned once in the entire election. We talked about everything but climate change, except when Mitt Romney broke the silence and mocked it to the derisive laughter of the entire Republican convention. It was a very low moment in our history. He just talked about the rising seas and laughed, and everybody booed and laughed, and it was horrible. You know, the other day I just saw the very first political presidential advertisement I've ever seen. It was Bernie Sanders. And he mentioned climate change. And there was climate change in it. And this year in a Republican convention, because people like us, you know, tweeted Jake Tapper and said, you have to ask a question on climate. Well, somehow he did, between, you know, way at the end, like right after legalization of pot and maternity leave, you know, way at the end, he asked a question on climate, and of course the 12 dunces on the stage couldn't deal with it, but at least it got brought up. So we are making a difference. You know, Keystone got nixed. As Bill McKibben said, we did that. That's why Keystone got nixed. And so we got to keep it up. We got to keep up the pressure in Paris. And we got to step up our game, and that's largely what Wynn's going to talk about. But we do have to step it up, because a chart I saw, done by a group of, you know, serious researchers, showed that the proposals now on the table in Paris, if those proposals went through, we would still rise 3.5 degrees centigrade. If we go on with business as usual, we're going to rise 4.5 degrees. And, of course, the last climate summit, we all agreed in the world that 2 degrees was it. So this Paris thing has not only got to, you know, happen, but it's also got to ramp up in the years following Paris. So we got to keep up this fight no matter what they do, because the Paris proposals, as they stand now, are still spelling climate tragedy. I mean, that's how dire the whole situation is. It's interesting to know that in the Ice Age, when where we're standing right now, we were covered with 1 mile or maybe 2 miles of ice, the average global temperature was only 6 degrees colder than it is now. 6 degrees difference made miles of ice. And we're going towards 3, 4, maybe 2. I think the world sucks now with the climate, so I mean, imagine it getting it worse. And I don't understand why it's so hard to get this message through. Sometimes I'm just so baffled why our message is so hard to get through. I mean, I watch the evening news, and I watch the streets of Houston flooded in water, and I watch neighborhoods burning down in California, and I said, all we're trying to do is stop this kind of stuff. Is that such an outlandishly radical thing to want to do? I mean, if ISIS came in, or a terrorist group, and did one of those destructive events, we'd go fight a 10-year war for it. But when our warming Earth's climate and weather does that, we just go, huh, what are you going to do? I just don't get it. So let's keep it up. And there's no one here better to inspire us to do that than Wynn Stevenson. He's a former journalist, producer at NPR, written for all kinds of prestigious magazines and newspapers. Thank you. She's very helpful. Here's his book. What we're fighting for now is each other. It's a fantastic book. Yeah. And, you know, as you leave here, you could just walk down to the bookstore and buy it. because you want it. You really do. It's a fantastic book. It's very inspirational. Wen is very inspirational. So he had this great journalistic producer career going. And 2010, he woke up one morning and said, you know, how can I do anything but work for the climate? So he left all that behind. Well, he's still writing, but everything he's doing now is focusing on climate because he wants us to step up our game. So come on up, Wen, and tell us how to do it.
I've been thinking a lot about, probably too much, about what sort of words can actually capture the true weight of this moment, you know, this historical moment, our moment. As, you know, the nations of the world converge on Paris, you know, and seemingly every non-governmental organization on the planet that's devoted to environment or climate and energy and economic development and poverty and human rights. And let's not forget the corporations. The corporations and their lobbyists, of course. You know, but not just NGOs and corporations and world leaders. But, you know, people. Like all of you. Like me. Folks, like actual citizens, converging on Paris to, you know, try to come up with a global response and what many would now some think is an impossible response to this unfolding catastrophe, this global climate catastrophe that is unfolding before our eyes. And now, as of just a couple of weeks ago, trying to do this in the midst of violence and fear and repression. Climate activists are now being, in some cases, stopped and prevented from getting into France. Some are under house arrest. The mass mobilizations have been canceled. You know, meanwhile, you know, sporting events are okay, apparently, during this, but not massive climate marches. You know, you don't even have to go to Paris for that kind of thing. You know, on the op-ed page of the Boston Globe, we have esteemed academics telling us that, you know, the climate movement really ought to just calm down a little bit and hit the pause button. How many of you feel like hitting the pause button? Yeah, that's what I thought. So what words can really, you know, capture this moment? Well, a few of us just walked down to Walden Pond a few minutes ago. That made me think of these words. If I have unjustly wrested a plank from a drowning man, I must restore it to him, though I drown myself. I must restore it to him, though I drown myself. Let your life be a counter friction to stop the machine. Let your life be a counter friction to stop the machine. Yeah, Henry David Thoreau wrote that in the radical abolitionist essay called Resistance to Civil Government, better known as Civil Disobedience. Let your life be a counter friction to stop the machine. Think about that. So, at the end of the summer of 2012, something like 80% of the so-called, what used to be called the permanent Arctic sea ice, the floating sea ice covering the Arctic Ocean, 80% as measured by volume, was gone, melted. Did you know that? 80%. You know, it fluctuates a bit from year to year. It's somewhere around 75 or 80% right now. But scientists are telling us that, you know, we may very well have an ice-free Arctic summer within the next decade. Something that the human species has never witnessed.
What we know for sure is that the rate at which the Arctic is melting far, far exceeds what the scientific models predicted. And we know that the stability of the global climate system depends largely on the Arctic. The window in which to prevent the worst scenarios is literally closing before our eyes. This is really happening. This is really happening. Meanwhile, and I'm sorry, but it has to be said, meanwhile, the fossil fuel industry and those that do its bidding, the fossil fuel industry, which holds in its carbon reserves, we now know, holds the fate of humanity and of life on Earth in those carbon reserves. The industry has something like 5 times more carbon in its reserves globally than the science says can ever be burned sanely if we want to hold global warming to a so-called safe level. And yet, its business model, its profit model, requires, at this point, you know, extracting and burning every bit of it. In fact, hundreds of billions of dollars are being spent every year still on exploration and development of new reserves, including drilling. You know, they really would love to drill up there in that melted Arctic. Because apparently 5 times isn't enough. This is really happening. We face an unprecedented situation. A radical situation. It requires a radical response. That is a serious response. A serious response. Right? This number that we all have heard, 2 degrees, which is what the Paris Climate Summit is all about, supposedly. Right? There's good reason to believe that even a rise of 2 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial average will result in disastrous consequences beyond humanity's control. Right? In fact, given what we're already seeing, having raised the temperature about 1 degree Celsius, right? Catastrophic, quote unquote, catastrophic warming is already happening. Because this is what I want you to remember. What is quote unquote catastrophic depends on where you live and how poor you are. And more often than not, the color of your skin. Yep. That's right.
Yeah.
And so, if you're one of the poorest and most vulnerable people on the planet, the majority, actually, of the world's population, you know, in Bangladesh or the Sahel or Louisiana or maybe the Rockaways, even 1 degree can mean and has meant catastrophe. Right, so we're not really having an honest conversation globally or nationally about this situation. Right? The question now is not whether we're going to quote-unquote stop global warming or solve the climate crisis. Right? We have a climate crisis. We're in it. This is it. Okay? The question is whether humanity is actually going to act quickly and decisively enough to salvage civilization itself in any form worth salvaging. That's what I want to argue here, all right? Right? Whether any kind of stable and humane and just future, any kind of just society, is still possible. What do you really care about, you know? Is a just society still possible? Well, it is. It is still possible, right? That is what the climate and energy experts of the world are trying to explain to us, okay? That the barriers, as seemingly insurmountable as they may be, are no longer technological or financial, right? They're political. They're political. Which is to say, they're moral. They're moral. Let's be clear. Let's be crystal clear. of what that means, right? Given what we know, and have known for decades about climate change, in fact, what we now know ExxonMobil has known about climate change for decades, right? To deny the science and deceive the public and willfully obstruct any serious response to this global emergency, right, is to willfully allow the eradication of entire countries and cultures. Okay? It is to rob people, starting with the poorest and most vulnerable on the planet, of their land, their homes, their livelihoods, even their lives, and their children's lives, and their children's children's lives, for profit, and for political power. There's a word for this. These are crimes. These are crimes against the earth, and they are crimes against humanity. They're crimes against humanity. So what is, I mean, how do you respond to something like that? You know, what is the proper response to that? You know, remain calm, we're told. You know, no scare tactics or hysterics, please. You know, cooler heads will prevail. Enjoy the Earth Day festivities. You know, hit the pause button. Everything's fine, nothing to see here. Cooler heads will prevail. Well, look, I agree. You know, scare tactics and hysterics are not helpful. But I'm sorry. The cooler heads have not prevailed. All right? It's been a quarter century since the alarm was sounded. The cooler heads have failed. They've failed. You want, you know, calm, cool-headed reason? How about this? Masses of people, most of them young, a generation with little or nothing to lose, physically, non-violently disrupting the fossil fuel industry and those that support it and abet it. Yeah, getting in the way of business as usual, forcing the issue, like they've been doing down in Boston where Spectra Energy is trying to build a pipeline right through West Roxbury. Well, guess what? Over 40 people got arrested on that pipeline route, including some people here today. And Spectra went home for the winter early. That's right. They'll be back in the spring, but so will we. So will we. That's just one example. Yeah, acting like, you know, we actually believe what the science is telling us. Acting like, you know, we actually care about our fellow human beings. Now look, this is hard, right? I always like to just sort of cut through the rhetoric, you know, at some point and just admit that this is really hard. Coming to terms with the climate catastrophe is hard. It's frightening, it's infuriating, and it's heartbreaking, right? So again, how do you respond? What is the response to this? So, you know, rather than giving in to retreating into various forms of denial and fatalism and cynicism and all that, more and more people are realizing, you know, that it's going to take something more than just quote-unquote environmentalism. You know, it was never really fair to leave this up to the environmentalists in the first place, right? It's going to take something more than environmentalism and, you know, virtuous green consumerism, you know, to deal with this situation. That, you know, if the only thing at this point that's actually going to avert an apocalyptic future and to actually help us get through what we know is coming with our humanity intact is the kind of truly transformative social and political movement that has changed the course of history in the past. That's right. You know, the kind of movement that made possible what was previously unthinkable. Whether it was the abolition of slavery, or civil rights, the right of women to vote, labor rights, civil rights, gay rights, all, you go down the line. right? These things happened because radical social movements forced the issue, took ideas and demands and concepts that were previously considered completely out of the mainstream, completely radical, and forced them into the mainstream. That's the way revolutionary change happens. That's right. But to do that, you know, to actually get the kind of movement that we need, I think first we have to acknowledge that our mainstream environmental movement and the, you know, corporate-controlled political system through which it has tried to work for decades has failed. Has failed. You know, that we've already lost the, quote, climate fight. If that means solving the climate crisis and saving some semblance of the world that we know. Right? That it was lost before it began. Because it started so late. Right? And that it's time now to fight like there's nothing left to lose. But our humanity. Like there's nothing left to lose but our humanity. Now, some of the same folks who, you know, write op-eds for the Boston Globe telling us to hit the pause button, you know, they also tell us, you know, don't make this climate change thing, you know, sound like a left-wing issue. By which they mean, you know, don't make it about justice or human rights or any of that stuff. And, you know, it is true that there are a lot of people, including among climate experts, who don't really like to talk about justice. They don't really like to talk about race or about inequality of all sorts, about the distribution of wealth, the national level or, you know, much less the global level, where, as none other than Pope Francis recently reminded us, we owe the rest of the world, the developing world, the majority of the world's population, a massive climate and ecological debt. That's right. You know, and they don't really like to talk about the fact that women, in particular, bear the brunt of climate change globally. You know that? I mean, when we say those often repeated words, the poorest and most vulnerable, more often than not, that means a woman, and indeed a woman of color. So yeah. And you know what? I don't really like to talk about those things either. You know, because look at me, right? It puts me on the spot, right? But if I'm serious about this, if I'm serious about justice, and if I'm serious about climate, like morally serious about it, I have to face these things. All right. Thank you. And here's why. Here's why I have to face these things. Because when we look at what is coming, what we know is coming, right? Even if we do everything right from this point on and keep carbon in the ground, even given what we know is still coming, the amount of climate change that's in the pipeline, so to speak. You know, our fights for social justice and human rights and real democracy matter more than ever. Because when we stare that climate reality in the face and we think about what we're facing and what our children and grandchildren's generations are facing, you know, and when we look at what, you know, we think about, you know, scarcity and instability and conflict, and when we look at what those with wealth and power, you know, are likely willing to do to hold on to their wealth and power, you know, when we see this country scapegoating entire classes of people and closing our doors to desperate refugees? Yeah, when we look at all of that and we think about what we're facing, it matters all the more what kind of a government we have, what kind of a democracy we have, what kind of, hey, a constitution we have. Depends. It matters all the more what kind of a society we have and what kind of a people we're going to be as we head into that future. That's right. So look, I only have a little bit more to say. You know, I realize that any sort of talk of a, you know, radical, transformative movement, you know, just sounds, can sound hopelessly, you know, naive, right? You know, the people like me are out of touch with political reality, right? I mean, you know, I spent the better part of two decades as a journalist in national media. You know, I do know the country and the political culture in which I work, right? But here I am anyway. Because here's the thing. I also know that abolishing slavery sounded hopeless and naive in 1857, when Frederick Douglass said, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress." I know that ending Jim Crow sounded hopeless and naive in 1955, when Rosa Parks stayed in her seat on that bus in Montgomery. Right? I also know that even something as seemingly simple and obvious as rejecting the Keystone XL pipeline sounded hopeless and naive in 2011, before thousands of people started getting arrested, putting their bodies on the line, and in places like East Texas, some people risking their lives to stop a pipeline. And before, that's right, and before a president of the United States started listening. Yeah, and guess what? Yes, it's just one pipeline. One very big, very dangerous, very symbolic and political pipeline. And you know what? Montgomery, Alabama was just one southern city. And that bus was just one city bus.
Hello?
But when? But when? Isn't it too late? Isn't it too late for all of that? I don't know. Is it?
No.
Yeah, you tell me. Is it too late? We know what the science says. What does your conscience say? What does too late even mean? Too late for what? You know, even in the face of all we now know, will it ever be too late to hold on to some kind of faith in human decency? Or some kind of hope, as irrational as it may seem sometimes, in our fellow human beings? Or, you know, to love our brothers and sisters on this planet? Because those things, faith and hope and love, are every bit as real as the science. They're every bit. That's right. They're every bit as real as the CO2 in the atmosphere and the carbon in the ground. They're as real as the melting Arctic and the acidifying oceans. And you know what else? Those things, faith and hope and love, are the very stuff that movements are made of. Real movements. The kind of radical, transformative movements that have changed the course of history in the past and maybe, just maybe, might change it again if enough of us are willing to fight, and fight hard enough, and fight lovingly enough, and never give up. Thank you.